Hello, welcome back everybody. This is Julie Knudsen with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 128. And today's episode is going to be by request. I had an individual whose dog, I haven't ever had him as a client or anything, but somebody that I've been communicating with over time a little bit, who got a new dog for hunting and maybe if they have some time, running, playing some of the dog games with them. But they got this dog as a puppy and really researched and, you know, found a good dog out of good lines and healthy lines and had all the clearances and all the stuff. Very excited about this and have had kind of an onslaught of physical problems with this dog. And then they've actually turned into some behavioral problems. And so he's been asking me for some advice. And he actually said, because this has just been an ongoing thing, and he said, you know, would you consider putting it in your, doing a podcast on the subject? Because he felt that he probably wasn't the only one with these kind of problems. So, and this is a topic that's very near and dear to me, something that I feel very strongly about, you know, raising these guys and the way that they interact and live with us and how important that really is. So I'd be more than happy to. I'm going to use a little bit of his story along the way. But they got this puppy, and when they got it and brought it home, it had 8 weeks old, somewhere around 8 or 9 weeks old when they got it. And they got, you know, it came from a long ways, and they got it home, and the little dog had some diarrhea and bloody stools. So the first thing they did was go to the vet, which is responsible. You know, if you don't know what's happening, it's responsible. I would say that a significant percentage of puppies that are removed from the only place they've ever known in their existence for 8 weeks and put into a complete, you know, they're transported and then they're taken to a new place, new people, and mom's not there, brothers and sisters aren't there. I mean, that would be very stressful on any one of us. And it is on a little puppy. So one of the ways that dogs manifest stress, because they can't sit there and go, hey man, I'm kind of feeling angsty here, this is a new environment, they can't do that, but they physically manifest the emotions and the psychology of what's happening. And so one of the ways that dogs of all ages manifest stress is through their digestive tract. So sometimes it can be in salivating and in even vomiting. And more often than not, it's that they develop runny stools. Now, I don't know the mechanism that goes on literally within the intestines that changes the nature of the stuff passing through. But they wind up with diarrhea. And sometimes, you know, there's a little bit of blood in it and stuff. And then people get very, very worried. Now, I'm sure that a certain percentage of times there's something severely wrong and that dog needs to go to the vet. So I want to make sure people understand that. But I've seen it, I don't know how many times, countless times. And usually what I learned from the Colorado State teaching veterinary hospital was what they said is when dogs get that kind of thing, that a Metamucil, which is, you know, what us old people take, which changes the pH inside of the digestive tract and therefore kind of lowers the titer, the concentration of, you know, bad guys in there. But it also just literally through the methylcellulose or whatever it is that's in there, it literally kind of bonds everything together. And so diarrhea or not, they tend to have a solid stool that comes out. And we were told that in our business a long time ago. And just so people know, you know, when we do the field dogs and they're out in the fields and they're drinking out of the stock pond or the puddle or the river or whatever, they get nasties. They get Giardia. I have apparently Giardia in my system from having been in this environment so long. But they get the Giardia, which is a little nasty bug in there. And it's in their tracks. And if they're not used to it or if they're in a very stressful situation, which they can be hunting or training, the stress then allows that the bad guys in there to kind of take over, and then you get the real runny stools. And if you give them, instead of the systemic antibiotic, which attacks everything, including the digestive tract, you give them the Metamucil or, you know, the lookalikes that are there that cost a little bit less. If you give them that, again, it changes the acidity, the pH level in there. a digestive tract, which helps kill the bad guys, or at least drop the concentration of the bad guys, and then pulls everything together. And then by reducing the stress in their system, you can, you know, it can, the body can naturally overcome this. Because once dogs get that kind of stuff, they have a small amount of it with them all the time. And then when you do, and then you get very stressed out, your immune system does not function as well as it normally does. And so the concentration of the little Giardia bad guys or other bad guys can rise. And then you wind up getting diagnosed with this Giardia, and then they give you the flagyl, the stuff, you know, the antibiotics and all that. And it's just kind of a never-ending cycle. So I use the Metamucil stuff. I carry it with me in my truck with me, and I have it here at the kennel. And also when little puppies come, I know they're going to have probably diarrhea. And unless there's something that's alarming and unusual, not in the norm, in which case they go right to a vet, you give them just a little bit of that. And for a little 8-week-old puppy, you know, we're talking about, you know, a quarter of a teaspoon or less. And you wet it and put it in their food and do it for several days, and you'll find it very often you can get rid of that. So one, this little dog comes in with that stress related. He didn't have any bad diseases or anything. And then they start pouring the pharmaceuticals to him, which is tough on an 8-week-old body. You know, pharmaceuticals are tough on bodies, period. And if they're going to save their lives, then yeah, it's worth it. But when it's really not necessary, I question, both for myself and for all my animals, whether it's worth it. If I can overcome this in a more natural way without becoming immune to antibiotics by excessive use of them, then I'll do that. So kind of a lecture on that deal. But so they went, and then the little guy's on antibiotics for a while, and it clears it up. So, well, it kind of clears it up. And then it kept cropping up again a little bit. So now that they're thinking, gosh, we got a dog with a weak digestive, you know, or irritable bowel or all this kind of stuff. And so the vet and them are lining up with ways to help this dog through the better use of chemistry, right? When addressed problems it'll only get worse when they get older, you know, and you start doing stuff with them. Oh my goodness, he's telling me this stuff. And the dog doesn't have something wrong with him. So no, we're not going to just keep pouring the pharmaceuticals to him. So I told him about the Metamucil and just a little bit, and not just one time, but you do it for several days. If you do that for 3 or 4 days and then stop and it goes right back to bad again, then you go to the vet, because whatever is wrong in there is still wrong. But if you do it for 3 or 4 or 5 days and everything is good, then you addressed, you know, the stress-related problem that's in there. So that's how this little dog started. So it came from its safe world with mom and brothers and sisters to this place and people and kids and then in the vet and then shoving stuff down its throat and giving it all this stuff. And the little bodies, in my opinion, I am not a vet, I am not an expert in this, are not really ready, just like little human infants, for all kinds of chemical assistance with things. You know, they're just growing and developing. So already we're sort of stressing this body out with these things that are not, perhaps not completely necessary. And no, I'm not some anti-vaxxer. I'm not any of that kind of stuff. But I think just throwing chemicals at everything right off is kind of a bad deal. So they bring this puppy, the puppy's home, and they finally get this thing rectified. And then I did tell them about the Metamucil, and they wound up with that, and the antibiotic thing was stopped, which is good. So they bring this dog. Now, he really wanted this. He's a mature guy, getting towards the latter half of life and stuff, and getting ready to retire. And, you know, he wants this dog so he can go do these things. And his wife, not so much. Because, you know what, puppies do in the house, and then we're going to bark, and the neighbors will be mad. And so, and then the kids are either gone or almost gone, and they have really no interest in this other than, oh, it's real cute. So you bring this dog into this environment where it's partly wanted and partly tolerated. And just like if you had a human child. Now, these guys aren't humans, and I don't draw a direct comparison, but I use this as an analogy so people understand. if you had a kid where dad really liked the kid and mom not so much, probably going to develop some behavioral issues and some, you know, that's not the best environment for a youngster to grow up in. Going, this one will support you and you can trust in them. And this one, if you don't, you know, you don't cross the line and you got to stay just right, or they'll be upset, or they'll put you, you know, in your room and you shut the door or whatever. It's that way with dogs. It's very, they are very, very susceptible to the emotional environment in which they live. And you don't ever hear that talked about. And it is just overwhelmingly the way that it is. So this little dog was in there with this guy who took him on the walk every morning and spent the time with him and researched the, you know, dog food, and said, I'll feed the dog, honey, don't worry about it, I'll do all this stuff. And he wanted it, you know, the kids wanted in, although they weren't there very much. And then she's just tolerating this whole thing. But if, when it makes a mistake in the house, they're, oh no, mom's mad. And so there's this environment in which the dog is uncomfortable. It is a high energy, uncomfortable thing for a dog. So if that was a kid, you might start to see some behavioral things. You would change the way, this is important. If you had a kid where one parent liked it and not so much, then it would change the way that it looked at the world and looked at itself. And their role in the world. So if you had a kid where mom and dad both, you know, were just ecstatic that they had this kid and both did their versions of their very best to support it, and the kid was safe and wanted there, not spoiled, you know, but safe and wanted, and the things were clearly understood, and there was a structure, trusted, you know, comfortable structure in which it could grow and you know, learn about what the world is, that would be best. And it's similar to that with dogs. So if they're in a structure where things are consistent, where they know, where they can trust everybody, you know, and that doesn't mean you spoil them, but it just means everybody understands this is, you know, what we hope for from this dog, and this is what I contribute, and this is what you contribute, and the dog feels safe and comfortable there, then the dog grows up, it develops with that in its state of mind and in its psychology. If, on the other hand, you got two different things where, and if any of you ever grew up in a family where you had the one nice parent and the one not nice parent, I had that. You know, life is always, you're living on the edge a little bit, because if the not nice one is gone, whoo, you can relax. And if the not nice one is there, you know, then you cannot relax. Because you know, stuff could happen. You might do the wrong thing, or you just might be in the way because they're tired that day and you're the target. So very difficult on little dogs if you bring them into an environment that is not stable and fairly consistent. And when they are in environments like that, just like it would be if it were you and me and we were the kid in that thing, then there is a level of stress in these little dogs that remains there. And whenever you have stress in a physical body, then it takes the body literally manifests the stress that's there in a variety of ways. And they're not good ways. There are various ways. It could be in their digestive tract. It could be in their skin. You know, the weird skin stuff that happens. And you know, when that happens, then you go to the vet and then they do the allergy tests. And we've had dogs in here that have been here for years in training, running field trials, and then got very stressed out. And the reason they got stressed out, because I was there and watched it, was because more was being asked of them than they had to give. They could not go in and open. They just didn't have enough cylinders to go do that. But they were still put in training and still being paid for. And so what happened is that the hair started falling out on this dog. The hair just starts falling out. You know, this looks terrible. Good Lord. So the dog goes into the vet and they do the test. And supposedly the dog is allergic to, get this now, feathers, birds, any kind of bird. and it named just about every kind of weed that dog has spent the last many years in. And then sheep And it was huge. It was more than a page of stuff. I finally got tired of reading after I passed about 25 things that dog had been around all of its life. So now suddenly it was allergic to them. And fortunately, the dog got pulled from training because of that. So, and that was the root cause of the whole problem. But then the dog had to be on, you know, gazillion-dollar dog food and had to have these monster-sized pills. And it was taking these huge pills. And I don't understand the mechanics, what's happening there, how that works with the antihistamines and the histamines and all that stuff. But this dog was on all of these pills that would keep it from, because you can't get away from birds. There's Tweety birds everywhere. There's feathers on the ground. And it just tremendous amount of money and time spent pouring the chemicals to this dog. And I don't know why anyone didn't say, gosh, for 4 years, this dog was fine. And when it, you know, when the ante got upped on the demands and then the hair started falling out, and I'll be honest, nobody listened to me. You know, I'm that kind of fluffy one that's always into the emotional side of stuff here. And the boy, I just felt so sorry, but at least she got out of training. And now, interestingly, several years out of training, she can still go out and run marks when the other dogs are doing it and goes home and sleeps on the bed and is now amazingly off of all medications, still retrieving birds. So that's an important lesson. You know, I think that dogs, the stress that dogs, it comes out in different ways. So their neighbor, this was a bunch of very successful doctor, lawyer, kind of, you know, CEO neighborhood. And so it's a lot of successful people with a lot of, you know, by successful, I mean people that are in enviable high dollar positions with a lot of stress on them. And their neighbor's dogs, two of their neighbors had the hair falling out thing. And so they didn't know if there was some kind of grass there in their area. They had a green belt out back or, what, you know, where the puppy took the walk. And they were real worried about, because they had the little spots on them and the hair falling. And so they were on all this trick stuff. You know, and I'm listening to this going, well, that's coming down the line. The hair falling out is probably going to happen somewhere between, you know, 1, 2, or 3 years of age. As this place where one of God's creatures doesn't really belong if it's not allowed to be the way that it is. So I'm trying to talk. He's telling me about the neighbors and the bald spots, and I was very honest. You know, I was like, well, yeah, that's probably going to come. I don't care where you got your dog or what its genetics are. All of that stuff's probably going to happen. Because dogs have no other way to tell people, to tell you that they are in a difficult situation. They are in a situation in which they either do not fit, in which their needs are not being met, which is kind of what it comes down to, or they are being, you know, put in a position that they can't do what is expected. And that could be anything like that dog that was supposed to run opens and just didn't have the ability to run a quad, all of them over 300 yards and then, you know, straight lines and perfection and all the unnatural stuff of that. It just didn't have that. It just didn't get it. It didn't have the interest. It didn't have what it took, the engine to go do that. And so it finally just had all its hair fall out because that's the only way that the body could say, hey, not doing okay over here, not thriving, not, you know, I just feel bad. And a lot of times, if that isn't addressed or recognized, that can continue to very bad ends. There's a lot of ways that dogs can continue to absorb the failure aspect of things, or the not really what it is they're not getting their needs met. And when that continues to happen, nature usually tries to take care of that. Right? All animals, when they don't get their needs met, usually fail. And because they're in a place where they do have plenty of food and water and shelter, then other things begin to fail because nature doesn't support something there without its needs being met. So I had a lot of discussions with him. Now, so that begs the question here, exactly what needs do these dogs have? Because I don't know that people often look at them that way. What needs does my dog have? It does not need, okay, unlike the commercials on TV, you do not need to have 3 bags of bacon bits sitting somewhere. You don't. You can have it, but that's for you. That's meeting your needs of feeling like a real good person and you're making this dog happy. That's what the bag of bacon bits is, assuming you don't have a dog with fear issues or trust issues. When a dog, just like us, dogs have certain needs. They want to have a real purpose in this world. It is, their purpose is not to entertain you by playing with $800 worth of PetSmart dog toys. That's not part of their natural world. Do dogs like to play? You bet. Just like we do. But that's not our first and foremost need. Hey, if I don't get to have a good time all the time, life has no meaning to me. That's really not how we're structured. Dogs are structured to have, they wish to survive and thrive and procreate. Okay, so the procreation thing, for the most part, we've removed that for obvious reasons. We don't need lots and lots of dogs. But, you know, and that's what humans do too. And we don't just, you know, that's also not something that we just let run wild, the procreation thing. It can't be that with dogs. But the thriving and having purpose. So any creature, I don't care if it's a spider or a worm or a camel or a tiger or a canine, they want to have a purpose, a reason when their day gets going. They have a reason. There's something in their life that gives meaning to them. That gives meaning. Throwing a squeaky toy around the house is not what gives meaning to them. And so when we get these puppies, one of the most powerful training things that I've ever seen, and again, this is for the toy poodle or the Afghan hound and everything in between, is when they have something in their day where they go do their thing. It is a learning experience for them. It is where they get to manifest some of the natural inclinations they have that were put into that particular dog breed. And that mutts have it too. Mutts, you know, every canine has driving forces in it. And those of us with retrievers, retrieving is that. But retrieving needs to have a little bit of a purpose. So it's not just like, hey, I go throw the tennis ball 800 times in the backyard and call it good. That is a chaotic, frenetic activity where they're just doing something that feels good. But what purpose does it serve? You know, where do they get the meaning out of that? That's just merely passing the time. And that's a very important distinction. So, and I told him with the puppy, right? And this goes with, I believe, every breed of dog there is. You go out there and you do that walk every day. And in a place off the leash, particularly when they're little, right? Off the leash where it's just you and the dog and no one else. Hopefully not raccoons or skunks or snakes or things like that either. Where the two of you go out together and move over the ground and you set up this extremely strong connection where the dog learns, this is why you do it without the leash, to stay with you. Some learn that, some do it from day one. Some, it might take a few weeks before they get the idea in their head, oh, I go with you and we're going to do this together. So you do that until you build this thing in their head where it's their time and you're the alpha dog and this is the beta dog and you guys are going to go out and do this thing together at the same time exploring the natural world in which all canines were originally intended. And they explore stuff, they discover stuff, they learn stuff, and they do this in partnership with you. It's all about you. They go when you say it's time to go, and they go where you say, and they go with you, and they go at your speed, and they go in your direction, and they stay connected with you, which is hugely powerful for the rest of this dog's life. They learn about you. They learn about how you are, and I have the whole thing on the walk. You know, how you are when you're happy, how you are when you're not happy, how you are when you're tired. They learn a lot about you. And if you are willing, then you, and this is important, you learn a lot about them. Observation, being quiet and observation. Learn what they do when they encounter new things. Learn what they do when they encounter obstacles. Learn about how much they think. Learn about how much they pay attention. Learn about how quickly they learn. Or, you know, some very quickly, some not so much. You learn humongous amounts about your animal. And you also learn about how tuned in they are. And you can teach them to be as tuned in as they are absolutely capable of if you pay attention. So when you and your dog spend time doing this, and it may only be in the beginning 10 minutes with a little tiny guy, later on with a bigger dog, half hour, an hour, whatever you have, worth whatever it is. One of the things that happens when you do this, other than the fitness of both of you, the connection, people call it bonding, I guess, that's fine. But there's a connection between the two of you, an unspoken connection, an unspoken communication. You're now down on the dog level. You communicate the way two dogs would doing this. And that is extraordinarily meaningful to that little animal because you've gone into their world. And that is hugely valuable. But when they go explore the world and they do this with you, you're the alpha dog. They learn to be as brave as they can be. They learn to as curious as they can be. You bring all of that out. And they do this with you. And they are, and this is built into our domesticated dogs, most of them, the ones that we really like, tend to be very service-oriented, particularly the retriever dudes, but very service-oriented. And I did this, again, my extremes are my miniature wiener dog and my Great Pyrenees did it with both of them. Got entirely different outcomes in terms of what these dogs' purpose were. And we did the same thing with both of them. But my wiener dog learned how to hunt rodents, and my Pyrenees learned what the boundaries were that she was to guard and where she was to stay and who was her flock. They learned their purposes on this particular activity. And not only did they learn them, they practiced them and they got very, very good. And neither one of those two dogs required a leash to come when called or to go somewhere with me. And because we got the most out of teaching these guys, okay, this is your purpose around here, and this is what you do. I'm the colonel again. I'm the boss. And so they got to go do what they were meant to do. They had an incredible amount of meaning so that every day, both from when they're puppies all the way till the end of their lives, When this was going to happen, it was just like you know, the nurse putting on her scrubs and all of her stuff because she's going to go into, you know, ICU and keep people alive. You know, there's a great deal of purpose and value and meaning in that, and that's the way these dogs were. They're going, okay, we're going to go out and we're doing what I'm here on the earth for, and there is probably no greater health giving or well-being giving thing to an animal than that. Because in these times that we spend together, just alone, not in a dog pack, just the two of us, when the time that we spend together doing this is ultimately where we set up what our relationship is and why you got this dog in the first place. And that gives this animal, meeting its needs. Let's talk about meeting this animal's needs. It is important. It plays a valuable role. It plays a role that isn't a role that any of the other dogs could fill, anything else could fill. It fills its role. You two have this connection with each other, this communication with each other, and this clarity about why we're all here on the earth and we're doing this stuff together. It gives this animal that. It gives them, and this is very important, the physical expression of itself. You know, moving over the ground, walking, doing things, running. There's no dogs in the world that were meant to sit in an apartment and do nothing but walk out to the grass out front, relieve themselves and walk back in. There's no dog that was, you just need to be like a stuffed animal. You know, if you want that, get a stuffed animal or get a cat, because they just do whatever they want and you don't, it's a different thing. But I have cats, so I'm not insulting cats at all. But it gives them what their thing is. And because with all living things, they need to have that purpose. And most of these guys are bred to do stuff, to do stuff. You know, and you know, you get a Malamute, you get a sled dog, right? That's meant to run for a long ways, and you put them in an apartment. This is going to be not a good situation, because they're meant to do something. And I see this so many of these big running dogs, you know, a lot of the bird dogs, a lot of the retrievers that are meant to cover a lot of ground and they don't ever get to. Okay, we're going to have most likely some health problems because their needs, and they don't even understand their needs. They can't go, don't you understand? I'm a sled dog. I'm supposed to run like for hours. I'm supposed to do this. And they don't know that. They just know that there's this thing, that this calling that they have, and they don't know what it is, and it just boils around inside of them. And so when all that stuff's boiling around, then they don't get to do it. Then something happens inside. And so there is I'm not a vet. A good vet could tell you all the kind of stuff that happens. But when animals' needs are not met, then they turn the anxiety from that on themselves and their bodies. And their bodies, the ill health, the dis-ease of not being what they're supposed to be, not exercising what it is they're here to do, by not having great meaning and purpose in their lives, when they don't get to do that, then all of that energy turns on the body itself. And all kinds of stuff can happen. So it can be physical, it can be the allergic responses, it could be my dog has such a sensitive stomach, or so many, and behavioral, oh my goodness, so many behavioral things. So of course, what do they have for that? Now they have basically, what is it, Xanax or Valium for dogs. They got that. So when you're going to just kind of tighten these guys up and never get their needs met, let's just drug them so it's not a problem. So that's, I'm sure, going to induce even better things, because the well-being of this animal is being entirely ignored. So the first thing I would say is, if you're not in a position, let's start with people. If you're not in a position to have your kids, raise your kids, have the time for them, have the resources for them, then perhaps put it off until you are, or coach teams, or go, you know, foster kids or do something. But I don't think people should have kids until they are ready to do right by them. And my goodness, it's the same thing for the dogs, right? It make sure that you have in place, one, an understanding of the animal you're getting, two, the housing and the place for it, so that somebody isn't getting driven crazy by the presence of this animal that doesn't want it. Make sure, you know, I would make sure that everybody is welcoming to the animal and not just tolerating it, because the animal knows that from moment one. They know it. You can't hide stuff from them. They know exactly where everyone is in an emotional and psychological state. They know exactly. They'll just tell you. They always know exactly. So when they're not wanted, that can be a difficult thing. And if you're not willing to take the time to give meaning to these dogs, and again, that's your teacup poodle. I've never had one of those. Closest thing I had was a miniature wiener dog, but he was a killer. So that one was easy. Meaning in his life was easy. But if you have a little dog that's so inbred from its natural thing, then there is still canine in there, and you can still go and take this puppy, this little dog, out someplace. It may not be, you know, for half an hour, but you have to give it where it looks forward to something every day other than sitting on your lap or getting fed something or sitting in a real squishy bed. That is so inherently disrespectful to something, you know, to these dogs that that's not what they're here for. They're here to feel like they're contributing. And part of meeting their needs, they're meeting a lot of your needs. People that get dogs for companionship, you got that to meet some needs that you have. But that's not the same need that dog has, unless you rescue an old dog. Rescue, if that's what you want, get some old dog that nobody wanted, you know, that's going to get put to sleep, that would just be very happy with just companionship. That's a great thing. But if you get a little puppy, that dog that, you know, has some, thinks that life is kind of cool, it would be very good if you can also, you know, give meaning and value to that dog beyond just sitting next to you, because there's dogs that are perfect for that. The little youngsters, not so much. So when it comes to, I got to finish addressing his needs on this. So a great deal of health problems and behavioral problems in young dogs comes from this particular thing. So wild and crazy, chaotic, oh, just go out in the backyard and throw the ball 800 times, drains a little bit of the energy storage, you know, their blood sugar levels and all that. But it doesn't do anything for meaning. It doesn't give anything for purpose. My purpose is to go out there and just run nuts on, smash into stuff and spit on everybody and throw the ball. Or, you know, we're going to go out and there's expectations for me. I have certain behavioral things I contribute. You know, I do this for him. He does this for me. That's very important. And then when you got dogs to go continue and perform and literally function in your life and have jobs to carry out, then as soon you begin to build that in there as well. You do. I have my wiener dog, and I didn't know I was going to have a field champion, but he learned about hunting rodents and got extremely good at it. That was just kind of inadvertent, but he had the opportunity by doing this walk every day. And so we discovered what gave him great meaning. And man, did he ever take that. And my Pyrenees too. I had no idea. How do you teach them to guard their flock and not leave the property and all that kind of stuff? But by going out and spending this one-on-one time, just us, man. And then after that, then she went with the other dogs so that she learned what these are the ones you keep an eye on, some of the family dogs. And so she wound up, she did a fantastic job. As long as she was here, we didn't even have skunks or raccoons up around anywhere in any of the buildings. And no coyotes, no nothing. Because when she finally passed away as an old dog, man, everything moved back. There's raccoons and everything was showing back up again. She had done such an awesome job because, you know, she was allowed to really find her purpose. And dogs that you're going to go compete with, you know, then you learn, you do the training stuff and you put that and that, you know, my goodness, dogs that get to go perform a function for people, you know, whether they're cattle dogs or sheep dogs or bird dogs or guarding dogs or whatever, you know, dogs that go do the stuff on the mats and in the ring and stuff. Those can be the happiest and healthiest dogs in the world when they are doing their thing in a structured manner where their needs are getting met. So I don't know if people think about that with their dogs. But I didn't say spoil. I have never spoiled a dog in my life because there's no love in that for the animal. That's just meeting my own needs. Oh, I'm just so happy I have this thing now. And I feel so good when I give them these things, and I feel so good when I spend all this money. That's not loving the animal. That's just making myself feel better. So when you really do love these guys, you leave that out of it and you find out what gives great meaning to them. I didn't say entertainment. Entertainment is a secondary thing that comes after you've worked hard, right? And it's the same thing with dogs. So how's your dog? And I think you've done that in a place that doesn't annoy your wife. You know, and that can be, you know, outside in the garage, have a little yard or run outside where she doesn't have to do anything. Make sure that that's not a negative deal. Most of all, put a lot of, you know, meet this dog's needs, purpose, intention, get out there, cover the ground, teach it to, you know, the retrieving rules, teach it to all the obedience rules, teach it to respect people. And more often than not, a dog that contributes to the family instead of what she's expecting, which is the dog is just going to take something. It's going to take time. It's going to take attention. And we're going to have to deal with it peeing on the floor. And then we're going to have to, you know, that's a negative thing. When they find out that this dog is a contributor, not a consumer of the family and the time and the resources, a lot of times that completely wins them over. I have seen that many, many times. And then suddenly the wife becomes kind of protective of the dog and wants to share things with the dog because she sees, and this isn't like a female thing. This is one particular example because it goes both ways. But when she gets to see that this dog is really quite a contributor and is very pleasant and it's not demanding and it's not taking things from you, then she will a lot of times come right over and also, you know, believe in this kind of a relationship with an animal where you meet the needs of the animal and then it comes in and fits into your life in a very productive, contributory way. And then it's a win-win all around. So I hope that makes sense. It's kind of long-winded on that stuff. But that's really the nature of a really successful relationship with any kind of dog. Anywhere for any circumstances. But it takes some thoughtfulness and some awareness and a little bit of your time and dedicated attention. So I hope that's helpful to you. And maybe a little line down the road, let your wife listen to this because we kind of did it for the two of you. And I hope that works out well. Stay in touch. And everybody, I'll be back soon with another one.